If an image is not necessary for people to practice a religion, then certain religious symbols and places of worship are also not important. Buddhists are condemned by some people as stone worshippers. But worshipping stone is harmless and respectable than throwing stones at others because of their different religious practices. What harm is there if people are allowed to gain some sort of religious consolation through the practices of their respective religion? However, to practice the teachings of the Buddha image is not compulsory. People can practice this religion without the image of the Buddha, because the Buddha did not encourage people to develop personality cult. According to the Buddha, Buddhists should not depend on others, even on the Buddha himself, for their salvation. Each and every person is responsible for his or her own salvation.
During the Buddha's time, there was a monk named Wakkali. This monk always used to sit in front of the Buddha and admire the beauty of the physical features of the Buddha. He told that he gets an enormous happiness and inspiration by admiring the beauty of the Buddha. The Buddha replied that you cannot see the real Buddha by watching the physical body. The one who sees my teaching sees me. The most important aspect in Buddhism is to practice the advices given by the Buddha. In this respect, it makes no difference whether Buddhists pay homage to the Buddha or not. But to many devotees, it is an important act. However, the Buddha did not say that he is waiting for our salutation. Then, how did the Buddha image originate? It is difficult to find out whether this idea was given by the Buddha or not. Nowhere in the Buddhist scripture does the Buddha request that an image of himself be made. However, the Buddha did give permission to preserve his relics. The Venerable Ananda once wanted to know if it was permissible to erect a pagoda or chaitya in memory of the Buddha as a way of paying respect to him. So, Venerable Ananda asked the Buddha, is it proper to construct a pagoda while you are still alive? The Buddha's reply was, no, it is not proper while I am still alive. You can erect this object of veneration only after my passing away. Also in his last sermon, the Mahaparinibbana Sutra, the Buddha advised his disciples that if they wished to pay their respect to the Buddha after he passed away, they could erect pagodas to enshrine the bodily relics. This advice was in keeping with the custom of that time in India. The custom was to erect pagodas to keep the relics of the holy people. The relics were kept to remember and to pay respect to the holy man. At the same time, the Buddha himself neither discouraged nor encouraged his disciple to create an image of him after his passing away. The idea to create a Buddha image came from his followers who wanted to gain some satisfaction and religious inspiration from such serene figure. They also used to enshrine some relics of the Buddha when images are being erected.
Chinese traveler Hu Enxian, who visited India nearly 1,000 years after the Buddha, has mentioned in his record how the first Buddha image was erected. However, the Buddhist history or scripture does not support his observation. Nevertheless, here is the story that he recorded.
Once the Buddha spent 3 months in heaven preaching the Abhidhamma or higher doctrine. During his absence, the people who went to the temple were very unhappy because they could not see the Buddha. They began to complain. Venerable Sariputta, the chief disciple, went to see him and reported the situation to the Buddha. The Buddha advised him to find a person who can create an image that looked exactly like him. Then the people will be happy to see this representation of the Buddha. Sariputta returned and approached the king and asked his favor to find a person who could create a replica of the Buddha. Soon a man was found. He carved the image out of sandalwood. After the image was placed in the temple, the people became very happy.
From that day onward, according to Yuanxian,
people started copying this replica of the Buddha. But it is difficult to find evidence in Buddhist literature and history to support the existence of Buddha images in India until nearly 500 years after the passing away of the Buddha. At that time, the devotees used to pay their respect to the Buddha by keeping either a lotus flower or only the picture of the feet of the Buddha. It seems that at that time also, people used to believe that it is not advisable to erect the Buddha image, since it is quite possible to disfigure the real features of the Buddha. Many historians claim that Buddha image was first erected in India during the period of Greek occupation. The Greeks helped and encouraged the Indian people in the craft of erecting the images of the Buddha. Since that time, people in many countries began erecting images. The images in the various countries were sculptured according to the style of artistic expression and physical features of the people in that country. Within each Buddhist country, the style of the Buddha image also evolved into different forms and styles according to the different period of his history. Pandit Nehru, Prime Minister of India, says about the Buddha image, "His eyes are closed, but some power of the spirit looked out of them and a vital energy filled the frame. The ages rolled by and the Buddha seems not so far away after all. His voice whispers in our ears and tells us not to run away from the struggle, but calm eyes, to face it, and to see in life ever greater opportunities for growth and advancement." During the Second World War, General Ian Hamilton found an image of the Buddha in the ruins of a temple in Burma. He sent this image to Winston Churchill, who was the Prime Minister of Great Britain, with the message, "When you are worried, just look at this reposeful attitude and smile at your worries." Count Kesselring, a philosopher, says, "I know nothing more grand in this world than the figure of the Buddha. It is an absolutely perfect embodiment of spirituality in the visible domain." Another scholar says, "The images we see of the Buddha are symbolic representations of politics. The homage and respect paid to the Buddha is but a symbolic veneration of his greatness and the happiness we find in his teachings. The calm and serene image of the Buddha has been a common concept of ideal beauty. The Buddha's image is the most precious common asset of Asian culture. Without the image of the Buddha, Asia would become nothing more than a geographical expression, however prosperous she may be. Buddhists respect the Buddha statue as a monument of the greatest, wisest, the most perfect and compassionate religious teacher who ever lived in this world. The image is necessary to recall the Buddha and his great qualities, which inspire millions of people from generation to generation throughout the civilized world. It helps them to concentrate on the Buddha. They feel in their mind the living presence of the Master, so that their act of worship may be vivid and significant. As a Buddhist, it would be most appropriate for you to have either a Buddha image or a picture of the Buddha in your home. Keep this image or picture not as an ornamental showpiece, but as an object of admiration, inspiration and veneration. The serene figure of the Buddha, an emblem radiating loving kindness, purity and perfection, services as a source of consolation and inspiration in helping you to overcome whatever difficulties, worries that you may have to face in your day-to-day activities in this troubled world. When you venerate the Buddha, you will be greatly rewarded if you meditate for a short while by focusing your mind on the great and noble qualities of the Buddha. If you think of this great teacher, you can perfect yourself through his guidance. It is therefore not unnatural that this respect should express itself in some of the finest and most beautiful art and sculpture the world has ever seen. Mr. Nehru again says, "When I was in jail, I used to think of this statue, and it was a source of tremendous inspiration to me." Anatole France, in his autobiography, writes, "On the 1st of May 1890, chance led me to visit a museum in Paris. There, standing in the silence and simplicity of the God of Asia, my eyes fell on the statue of the Buddha, who beaconed to suffering humanity to develop understanding and compassion. If ever a God walked on this earth, I felt here was he. I felt like kneeling down to him and praying to him as a God." Mr. P.D. Ostinsky, another Western writer, explained his feeling about the Buddha image that he has found in Sri Lanka. He says, "This Buddha is quite an exceptional of art. I do not know of any other work in art which stands on the same level as the Buddha with the sapphire eyes. That is to say, I know of no work which expresses in itself so completely the idea of other religions as the face of this Buddha expresses the idea of Buddhism. To understand this face is to understand Buddhism." Further he says, "There is no need to read large volumes of Buddhism or to walk with professors who study Eastern religions or with learned monks. One must come here, stand before the Buddha, let the gaze on those blue eyes penetrate one's life, and one will understand what Buddhism is. This beautiful Buddhist art of erecting images and wall paintings of various Buddhist stories have tremendously inspired to enrich art and culture of almost every Asian country for more than 2,000 years. What is it that makes the image of the Buddha so attractive to people who have cultivated their intellect? Perhaps the answer can be seen in the serenity of the image of the Buddha. Not only in color and line did men express their faith in the Buddha and the graciousness of his teaching. Human hands wrought in metal and stone produce the Buddha image that is one of the greatest creations of the human genius. Witness the famous image in Abhayagiri Vihara in Sri Lanka, or the Buddha image of Sarana, or the celebrated image at Borobudur, Indonesia. The eyes are full of compassion, and the hands now express fearlessness or goodwill and blessings, or they disentangle some thread of thought or call the earth to witness his great search for truth. Wherever the Dhamma went, the image of the great teacher also went with it as an object of meditation. If Buddhists truly wish to behold the Buddha in all the majestic splendor and beauty of his ideal presence, they must translate his teachings into practical situations and actions in their daily life. It is the practice of his teaching that they can draw close to him and feel the wonderful radiance of his undying wisdom and compassion. Simply respecting the images without following his sublime teaching is not the way to find salvation. A life so beautiful, a heart so pure and kind, a mind so deep and enlightened, a personality so inspiring and selfless service, such a perfect life, such a compassionate heart, such a calm mind, such a serene personality is really worthy of respect, worthy of honor, and worthy of offering. The Buddha is the highest perfection of mankind and the flower of the humanity. Sir Edwin Arnold explains the nature of the Buddhahood in his Light of Asia in this way. This is the blossom on our human tree which opens in many a myriad years, but opened fills the world with wisdom's scent and loves drugged honey. As a devotee, you should make it a daily practice to pay homage to this great teacher. You could do this early in the morning or late in the evening before you retire. And while you pay your homage to the Buddha, it will be beneficial if you make an effort to recite some Buddhist sutra. If you are a parent, you must pass on this worthwhile and time-honored religious practices to your children. You must help your children to realize and to appreciate the rich heritage. Here are some of the verses that Buddhists recite to remember their great teacher. As a mark of respect, in gratitude and in praise of the Buddha, devotees recite Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Honor to him, the blessed one, the worthy one, the fully enlightened one. Further, they recite some verses that explain the great qualities or virtues of the Buddha in this way. Itipiso Bhagava Arahan Samma Sambuddho Vijja Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavidu Anuttaro Purisadamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanam Buddho Bhagavati. Such indeed is the Blessed One, exalted, all-knowing, endowed with knowledge and virtue, well-born, knower of the world, a guide incomparable for the training of individuals, teacher of gods and men, enlightened and holy.
Therefore, the image of the Buddha is nothing but the embodiment of wisdom, enlightenment, perfection, holiness, and compassion. The Buddha that we can see through his teaching is more practical than the Buddha that we see through the image in the shrine. The image of the Buddha that we create in our mind through his teaching is more perfect and enlightened. The nature of his knowledge, wisdom, and realization of the proper perspective of everything in the mundane world and also the nature of supramundane state can be seen clearly. But the visual image can help us to create emotional inclination, and the serene figure also can help us to develop devotion, inspiration, and some sort of consolation to calm our minds.